It would seem that other ag podcasters have as much sharing their experiences in agriculture as I do with mine. This is Talk Ag to Me. Hello and welcome to Talk Ag to Me, the podcast dedicated to improving ag literacy around the globe. I'm your host, Brandon Black, and in today's episode, we interview Dylan Honkoop, an ag podcaster that's the host of the Real Food, Real People podcast, in which he shares his experiences with agriculture with the people that he meets up and down the state of Washington. We're going to get more into that in just a second, but just make sure that you, as we always say, make sure you like and follow, subscribe, do all those things, and share this episode not just with your friends and family on online, but also offline, around the dinner table, and anywhere else that you congregate. And also the Patreon is there if you'd like to donate. It is always appreciated. But without further ado, that's all I have for you. So let's get into the episode.
Thanks, Brandon. My name is Dylan Honkoop, and I host a podcast called Real Food, Real People here in Washington State. And the tagline is, you know, capturing and sharing my journeys all over Washington State, getting to know the real people behind our food. So very similar to the kind of thing that you're doing. We have some specific kind of advocacy goals, though. That's a part of the strategy of the organization that I built this podcast for, which is called Save Family Farming here in Washington State. So they still help support the podcast, help get sponsorships for it and all of that. We're into season three now. Where am I at 105 different episodes with not just farmers, mostly farmers, but also other people in the food system, because I think people are interested about that too. People who, you know, chefs, butchers, you know, even I've had a homesteader kind of person or two, just all kinds of different perspectives on food and farming.
Yeah, that's awesome. So could you give us a little bit of a history lesson, talk about why all this got started and what got you to where you're at today?
Absolutely. So, to back up on just a little bit more kind of bio stuff for me, I grew up on a red raspberry farm up here in the northwest corner of Washington State. We do, you know, this area is big for red raspberries and dairy and seed potatoes, a little bit of beef, and then a bunch of other assorted stuff from there. Both sets of my grandparents were in dairy. So I grew up, you know, helping on the dairy farms, feeding calves, small dairy farms, and then my dad's small red raspberry farm. Went to college, got my comms degree, knew all along I wanted to be a communicator. How that all fit together, because I still love the farming world, you know, it was like how I didn't know. Now I do. I worked in radio in Bellingham, Washington for 12 years, first as a reporter and a news anchor, and then a talk show host for quite a few years, and then I ended up managing the station on top of doing all that stuff, you know, a lot of news writing, news director stuff, you know, all this kind of the gamut of talk radio. So I was very comfortable, you know, just jumping on a mic and, you know, doing what we're doing here, or taking live calls and, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff, but also, you know, being kind of a student of the media and of the news and what's the dynamic here and why, you know, I eventually ended up hosting a show, which I still host for the radio station, called The Farming Show. Mm-hmm. Which honestly was called that because we couldn't come up with another name. So what's it about? It's about farming. All right. It's the Farming Show. And to just continue to study more and more this dynamic of how farming is covered or not covered, and why newsrooms get it wrong so often. And, you know, what are all the problems with farming and communication? And through the course of doing that show, I got to know the folks that I now work with, because they were starting at that time. This is 2015-ish, they were starting an effort here locally to start doing public outreach, kind of in a new way, with a real kind of on point perspective, thinking about how this fits in the overall public conversation and how to protect the future of farming in the community here and across Washington State, and how public outreach plays a role in that. And I love that. I was like, this is what needs to, you know, in years past, I'd be in the newsroom and stories about farming would come up and they would go to me, you know, well, you grew up around this, you know, so I give them information, but otherwise they didn't have a source. And what did they know? And then on the flip side, when I would be covering a story and I'd reach out to the farming community to get information, there was so much skepticism, which I totally understand. But there, it was just this, unless it was an absolutely 100% glowing, positive story, there was no conversation about it. It's like, culturally, that's not where we're at anymore. People are not just going to buy marketing about, oh, all the positive story. Let's tackle the tough stuff, you know, and there are crises that come up, you know, farming accused of different things, whether it's generally or there's a specific farm in the news. We need to be able to talk about that. I think first and foremost, because when you don't say anything, you're assumed to be guilty or part of the problem or whatever. And I could recognize that from my vantage point in the newsroom at that time. But, and here I was, you know, I still had a ton of connections in this small community. I knew a lot of these people, but I try to get them to talk and it's like, you aren't going to get a more understanding, friendly interview than me, to know what's going, you know, to get what's really going on, but they wouldn't do it, you know, for a lot of reasons, you know, the farming community is, you know, it's a stereotype, but in a lot of ways it's true. It tends to be more introverted folks, especially on the actual farmer side. You know, get out in the field, get work done. That the people who find their way there do that because they love that. They don't love the limelight being in the, you know, in the public eye. So they really don't want to do that. Plus, there's no structure because it's such a decentralized community. A lot of people use the word industry. I don't like to use that, and I can get into that later. Why the term industry, I think, is a problem. That we've in some ways brought on ourselves in the world of farming. But across the farming community, there was no, you know, like big actual industry, again, why I don't use that term, but you look at other industry here in Washington State, it's aerospace, right? Boeing is like the biggest employer. And I think farming's after that, but Boeing, you know, they have a whole PR department, you know, farming. There's no PR department to handle these things and say, okay, what is the right answer here? What's the truth? How do we get this across in a salient way? It's just, you know, who happens to pick up the phone when a reporter calls, and it's a mess. Mm. You know, people end up saying things that aren't right, don't make sense or not culturally relevant. So this is the problem that we were facing. And I was super pumped when they said they were looking for somebody. And things were getting super stressful at the radio station. It was time for a change, and this was perfect for me. So it brought together my comms world and then and my farming background, and right back working with, you know, I already knew a lot of the people. I knew some of the issues. I've learned so much more since, you know, delving into this full time. But the perspective of the organization was, we need to speak the truth and get the information out there, not just in a way that hits people with information, but that connects with them on a personal and emotional level, and in a way that's willing to refute the falsehoods out there and to correct the record, because there, you know, it's in some ways it's gotten away from us. We're behind the eight ball again, back to not having a communications plan or strategy or anything organized, totally decentralized farm by farm. You know, or, you know, maybe, you know, a lot of people think, oh, well, there's the commodity groups. They aren't really in a position to do some of the more serious, you know, especially dealing with blowback or crises. They aren't able to call people out when they're lying. They aren't allowed to, you know, get political and in the political process. And that's all tied up in this. So the perspective was, we need to be able to tell the truth, correct the record. And if we're really going to succeed in protecting farming, if we're going to win in the communications landscape, we need to expose who's really causing the harm to the things that the public cares about. You know, identifying that, as we call it, the moral high ground. What's the most important stuff to the public that they care about? We aren't going to change that. So if it's climate change, if, you know, for us here, it's salmon and fish, it's workers and making sure they're well taken care of. Those things are important to the public. We need to show, and because it's true, what we're doing to benefit those things. Mm-hmm. And secondly, we need to show who's really harming those. And oftentimes, the people harming those things that the public cares about are the people who are telling them they're standing up for the little guy. They're standing up for the fish. They're standing up for the worker. When you look at the actual real world impact of what they're doing, they're causing harm. You know, and so often you push farming out of a community, you make it with regulations, with bad press, with all this other pressure on top of everything else that farming entails, you push that out of a community, that's a net loss for the environment. Mm-hmm. Because at least here, you know, in Western Washington, I know a lot of places on the West Coast and beyond, you lose farming. It's, you know, I think the American Farmland Trust has numbers showing in some cases it's as high as 70 times more likely for that land to then be developed. Mm-hmm. And begin to be urbanized. Pavement is forever. So what is the choice? I think a lot of people think, oh, these farmers, you know, they do this or that. They, you know, they spray chemicals, they pollute with their manure, they don't take care of their workers, they're just out for a profit, which is laughable for those who understand how it really works and how hard it is and how little reward often can come at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. They just think, well, you know, who cares? Put pressure on them and either they shape up or ship out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they ship out, what do we have? Our food produced overseas. We have pavement here. Is this really the future that we want? And is this good for our streams and our fish? Is this good for workers who are losing opportunities, you know, and end up working in foreign countries where, you know, our food is produced by people who are working for $11 a day, no environmental regulations, no, you know, all of these things that we have here that, you know, that's what we lose and we push to something else when these folks who are telling falsehoods and pushing for, you know, onerous and unfounded restrictions on farming, creating bad press, all this kind of stuff. That's the upshot. That's the result of what they do. And we need to expose that. And we need to show the public the harm that they're causing. Now, a lot of people feel uncomfortable with that. Man, calling people out, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, for sure. I you're speaking my language. I mean, I'm almost a little bit upset that I hadn't found you sooner, because you're going for the exact same thing that I am. So when I started my show, one of the biggest motivations for it was, this was at the time, you know, when media was public enemy number one, right? Like everyone, you know, was afraid of media. Everyone was, you know, distrusting of it, especially the agricultural communities. And my local community was pretty heavy into that. So one of my main motivations was full transparency, you know, right? It was telling the farmer story. It was getting their experiences out there, the good, the bad, the ugly, everything, and sharing it in a way that, so like in my show, I don't cut anything from my episodes. I do no clips. I do no, you know, it's all, I do editing for audio quality to make it sound better, but that is all that's there. So that way the farmers have that security of knowing, okay, none of my words are going to be taken out. Nothing's going to be rearranged or twisted. It's everything I say is going out to the public. That's what's going to be there. And I've maintained that for consistency purposes, but mostly because I want the agricultural community to trust that people want to hear their stories and that, you know, we're not scared of what they have to say, and they shouldn't be scared of what they have to say either. And so that was definitely, you know, everything you were saying, I was just like, yep. Like this is, you know, this is something that it needs to be done. You know, agriculture needs a PR team. Like you said, you know, people need to be out there communicating what's going on behind the scenes, sharing the stories. And like I always like to say, if we don't tell our story, someone else is going to, and we're not going to like it.
Exactly. or not. And this is one of the things I learned in like in communications 101 in college, which is not saying something is still saying something.
Yes, exactly.
So those are the two. Yeah. Either you're going to tell the story or somebody else is. I say the exact same line all the time, and not saying anything is saying something.
Yes.
So what are you going to do? You know, it goes back. Well, a lot of this has to do with activism. Activism is driving the public conversation on food and farming. And a lot of people are like, oh yeah, activists, terrible people. Well, take a look at how activism really works. And that's what my organization is built on, is understanding what is their playbook, you know? And again, it starts with that, you know, what's the moral high ground? They claim, you know, activists then claim to seize that moral high ground. They claim to be looking out for the little guy, protecting the environment. And then what they do, and this goes back to just simple like human psychology that, you know, the old Westerns tapped into, who's the good guy and who's the bad guy. And the good guy wears the white hat and the black guy or the white. I'm going to have to edit that out.
Yeah, I'll take that out.
And the bad guy wears the black hat.
Mm-hmm.
So how are we communicating that way is what we need to think about. But then look at how what activism is able to accomplish by doing that. Then when they determine the moral high ground that they're protecting, they put the white hat on themselves. And in the case of farming, and they do this with all kinds of others as well, but in the case of farming, just like anybody else, they'll put the black hat on farming and say, the farmer's the bad guy here. He's harming this public good by doing X, Y, and Z, whatever it is that they need to do to accomplish their objectives. And then they have great relationships with the media because they're savvy and they've been at this for a long time. They know how to leverage their relationships in the media to the nth degree. So they get coverage for this. Plus, that's the kind of stuff that media covers. I know, I've been there. You know, when something is wrong, someone's accusing somebody of something, you know, there's drama, there's a negative, you know, the media isn't going to pick it up when it's like, oh, we had a record, you know, or, you know, maybe they would, a minor story of, oh, record raspberry crop. Well, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
But if, you know, if somebody's being accused of something, they jump all over that. So the activists know that. And then they take that media coverage and try to generate as much public outrage, or at least the perception of public outrage, as possible, because they know it takes strong emotions to get people to do things. And that's one of the strongest ones, is outrage. They get people outraged. Then what they know will happen is that our political leaders, our politicians and agency people as well, you know, in government, they feel like they need to be, you know, the white knight riding to the rescue, because that's what they do. So they, oh, there must be a problem. People are outraged. They're going to come and fix the problem, you know? So that's where we see them proposing laws, rules, you know, all these different changes, you know? So already we have the bad press for farming. Then we get rules that you usually don't consult the farming community and are all based on outrage and oftentimes false narratives that were designed to generate that outrage in the first place. And then it makes a you know, punitive, much more difficult place for farming to be. Sadly, the typical response from the farming community is, we aren't as bad as they say we are. Really, if you sum up a lot of the responses, it's like, well, no, here are the facts about this. And I'm not saying that we don't educate people with the facts. We need to do that. Yeah. But being behind the eight ball and being accused of stuff, which is happening all the time, you're not going to win just by saying, well, it's not really that bad. I mean, we do this in the, no, your best defense is a good offense. And
oh,
say,
yeah,
you know, if you really care about workers, or you really care about the environment, or you know, animal welfare, you know, you need to care about this, and this is what's really going on. And these people making these accusations and drumming this up, this is the truth about what they're really doing here. And they're harming those things that you care about. You know, and again, this is where the old school and a lot of farming groups in particular get really uncomfortable. It's like, we don't want to call anybody out like that. We don't want to be the bad guy. And a lot of it is an old school perception of, well, we already have, you know, communicators out there. Those are generally marketing teams.
Yeah.
You know, again, for checkoffs, for the various commodity groups.
Yeah.
They legally, in a lot of cases, can't do that stuff. And even if they could, they don't want to. That's not their role. This is not marketing that we're talking about. This is PR. Right. And oftentimes it's crisis PR, which is a different ball game.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to do that, you got to get out there and say, no, this is the truth. And here's who's actually causing harm. You've got to, you know, what we say by the typical response with, oh, well, here are the facts. You know, it's not as bad as they're accusing us of being. That's a gray hat approach. Back to the white hat and black hat that we were talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah.
That just turning your black hat a little lighter shade of gray.
Mm-hmm.
You don't win that way. You got to put the black hat on the other person.
Yep.
Oh, and back to what I said about the ag groups. Mm-hmm. And not only, you know, they rely on, you know, marketing teams. They think, well, that's going to be the communicators for those people. Aren't they don't want to be put in that position right. to deal with this stuff. The other thing is on the political side, there's a lot of lobbying, and they think, well, our lobbyists will get this fixed. We need lobbyists and people representing agricultural needs in our legislatures and our lawmaking bodies at whatever level of government. But that is only one of multiple tools. And now, particularly in our current political and cultural climate, they need the cover of what's happening in public to be able to get things done. They can't just go into a lawmaker and tell them, well, no, this actually doesn't make sense for our industry. Even though, you know, there's all these people yelling and screaming and outraged about it the other way. The lawmakers in this day and age go with pain avoidance.
Yep.
So who represents the most pain to them? The outraged or the appearance of outraged public that they need to deal with. So if all we have is a lobbyist going in there going up against that, they're never going to succeed. We need to understand what the activists have done, and we need to use the same playbook. Now, we don't need to believe, oftentimes activists believe, that the ends justify the means. And so they'll say anything. And this is where a lot of the falsehoods come from, because if they feel they're achieving their objectives, they have given themselves the permission to lie. Essentially, the ends justify the means. We don't believe that. We believe that's absolutely wrong, and we're never going to do that. Also, we're not going to dehumanize people as they've done. And that brings me to this podcast, which is that's one of the early ingredients that people haven't seen that have allowed them to create this hate and outrage, is that they have, over the last decades, dehumanized farming. It's believed to be just a big machine. It's all industrial agriculture, factory farming, as we've heard, when we know the stats are still, you know, 95% or more of farms in this country are family owned and operated. But people don't realize that. And you talk to members of the public that aren't connected with farming, they're like, no way. I thought it was like all factory farming now.
Mm-hmm.
And industrial agriculture, which is why I don't want to use that term industry, because industry is exactly what they're accusing us of. And an industry is a factory. That's where you go to make widgets, you clock out and go home. That's not what farming is. It's a community.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lifestyle. It's day in, day out, weekdays, weekends, Christmas morning, for crying out loud. It's, you know, personal. It's a whole family wrapped up into it. It's the future of your family, one generation after the next. The ultimate goal for a family farmer is, you're hoping to make some money. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But the ultimate goal is to pass something on to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes everything about how farming operates, as far as stewardship, doing the right thing across the board. So people need to see that. How then do we rehumanize farming? And that's where the Real Food, Real People podcast comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Is, you know, my other advocacy work, Real Food, Real People podcast, about half of my job. The other half is the advocacy stuff, where we're calling people out, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And showing who's harming the public good and defending farming.
Mm.
That's putting the black hat on those who deserve it. But we also have to put the white hat back on us. And that's what the podcast is about, to not just share information. People are really interested in the information about how farming works and what people do. But what's really important is that human part, again, rehumanizing farming to show the humanity that goes into the food that they eat and that's grown here. And to share an emotional story, to show that that farmer is like me and they go through struggles too, and they go through hard times and they really care about what they're doing. There's trust there. You don't build trust through information. You build trust. Well, information is part of it, because you got, I mean, you got to be able to back your stuff up and say, you know, we aren't actually lying.
Right. You know, exactly. No, it's, and there's,
oh, hold on. Do you still have me there?
Yeah, no, you're still good.
Okay. It just cut me off.
Oh, did it?
That's because somebody else is starting something else on this account, I think.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Anyway, so that's the point of the podcast, is to rehumanize. Let's share those stories. Let's make it emotional. Make it a human connection, because it's about food and families. And we can't miss that part of it in the middle of all the information and all the outrage.
Yep. No, I absolutely agree. And there's a lot there that I'd like to address. I just got the notification we only have 10 minutes left of this meeting, so I'm going to keep my ending short so I can give you a chance to plug all your stuff again. But no, absolutely. I mean, I want to start with what you ended off on there about how people don't trust the term industry, you know, because industries don't care. We need to show them that farmers do, you know. So that's the biggest thing. But I've had the same interactions. You know, I started interviewing people on my show outside of the ag industry that have questions about it, and I would say a solid 60-70% of the questions I got have been about, okay, why should we trust factory farming? It's like, because you don't know what factory farming is. And you don't, what you think factory farming is like a small, tiny fraction of what actual farming is. Mm-hmm. And so once you open their eyes to that, then they're like, oh, okay, well, I get it now. You know, so that the fact that they're not actively opposed to it, they just don't realize what they're thinking about when they think of farming. That should show that our mission here is not, you know, it's not lost on anybody. Like, there's definitely hope here. Just a couple things. Like you mentioned that, you know, the best defense is a strong offense. Yeah. If we're, you know, if us in the agricultural community are sitting there holding a shield up and we're just getting bashed by a sword constantly, nobody's ever going to trust us. We're sitting there constantly defending ourselves. You know,
that's where we've been for the last 30 years.
Right.
You know, that's been the perspective of, you know, let's just, and oftentimes back to where we started with, you know, if you don't tell your story, somebody else will, and saying nothing is still saying something, and it's usually not what you want.
Right.
And when we do that, that's the perspective of farming. Let's just make this story go away.
Mm-hmm.
Don't answer the phone. Get back out in the field. Just put your head down and keep working, and this will all go away.
Right.
Perspective. And when we do that, it makes it worse. It's not even a neutral, you know, it's a negative communication ultimately for our community.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And, you know, like you mentioned, you know, those in agriculture are scared of being the bad guy. Everyone already thinks they are. So where's the, you know, what else do you have to lose at this point? You know, like, why are you not just going for it?
Well, and we are losing farms, you know, and we're losing whole industries. You look at like asparagus in California, and there's a lot of reasons for that. And you can name a lot of other commodities as well, but it's going away. It's going to other countries where there are different, less pressures on them. Is that really what we want? Most people would say no.
Right.
But that's actually what's happening. So back to the internal perspective in the farming community, what do we have to lose?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we taking this seriously? I'd say I don't want to go down without a fight.
Yep.
You know, to say that there's something worth fighting for here, producing food locally, having families that are invested in the land and stewarding the land. I mean, it's just, and I could go on and on. We need to keep this. And people generally do still care about that. They just need to see that the decisions they're making and the chatter that's out there and the false narratives are genuinely making that go away. And soon we won't have much of it left if this all keeps up.
Yeah, No, exactly. 100% agree. And the last point I wanted to touch on of yours was the whole, you know, ag communicators are mostly in the marketing department now. That's like ag communications is a fairly new degree right now. Like general communications obviously has been around for a little while, but ag communications is fairly new. It's actually something that I've studied as a minor, you know, to my ag education degree, but it's one of those things that, you know, the only job in ag communications right now that's being advertised is marketing. There's no advocacy being pushed. There's no support for agriculture on the vocal side of things. Like that's just not something that's being talked about as a possibility because we're all focusing on it, even internally as an industry. We're focusing on how to be productive for the agricultural economy, not for the good and benefit of the community, you know? So I think
a lot oftentimes that's just seen as, well, that's extra, or, you know, how does that, what's the real ROI there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what give me your deliverables,
right?
You know, as people are used to working with a marketing department saying, well, you need to generate X number of sales and then it's worth it for us to pay as a community you to do this. And what they have to realize is there's absolutely, you know, they won't have any marketing to do if we aren't able to make our communities, our, you know, whether it's our counties, our states, this country, a safe place for family farming to continue in the media and cultural landscape, as well as the political landscape. It's not an A plus B equals C, like direct, here you can give the formula, this is how it's going to work, and we're going to return X number of dollars for you. Mm-hmm. But you won't be making any dollars if we aren't engaged in this kind of work. Because we'll lose what we have.
Yep, exactly. Now, and I could go on for that forever. We're running a little low on time here, so I'd like to give the opportunity to, again, plug all your stuff, let everyone know where they could find you, and once again, just kind of close out with any messages you might have.
Absolutely, and thank you very much for having me on, reaching out. I appreciate it. Again, my podcast is called Real Food, Real People. Connecting you and connecting the urban public with the real people behind their food. Realfoodrealpeople.org is the website. But we've since added video content, and you can get that on Instagram at @RFRP_podcast. Also on Facebook, Real Food, Real People Podcast. If you search that up there, we're on YouTube, Real Food, Real People Podcast, Twitter. I think that's the extent of the social for now. Everybody says you got to get on TikTok. I'm not sure how my longer form stuff is going to fit with that. I guess I need to do more editing into clips or something for that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just trying to be where people are. But as you know, it takes a lot of work to do that sometimes. So that's where you can find us. And really, I would appreciate any sort of subscribe, any sort of interaction with our stuff on any of our social platforms. It helps us grow to get that message out there, to get these real stories to people so people can see there are real people growing our food who really care. They've been through hard stuff. They're just like you. Mm-hmm. They aren't some rich guy in an office. They've got their hands dirty and they're on the ground, and they've got a lot to share that people can learn too about how our food is grown, and you know, because health and environmental impact and all of these things are so important to hear directly from the producers. You can gain a lot of wisdom there. So yeah, you can check all that stuff out there. Also, the larger advocacy stuff that we're doing is savefamilyfarming.org is our website, where you can check that out. And then we have some local affiliates here in Washington State also that do some various things. So I'd appreciate anybody checking and, you know, Save Family Farming is on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter as well.
Awesome. Yep. I will be putting all the links to everything down in the description of this podcast. So for anyone listening, you can easily go and find Dylan and show him as much support as you could possibly give. I know that I will be doing the same. Because this is an awesome project I really want to push more attention to, because as we just mentioned, it's just not being done enough. So that being said, thank you so much for Dylan for taking the time to talk to us today. I definitely appreciate it, and hope everyone who's listening enjoyed, and I hope to catch all of you next week. And don't forget, if you ate today, thank a farmer. And there we go. Thank you so much, Dylan, for being such a great guest on today's episode. I'll make sure to put all the links down in the description so you can all check Dylan out and go listen to his podcast. It's always nice to support people who are working towards the same goal that we're working on here. But
that's all I have for you guys this week. Make sure once again that you like and subscribe, follow, do all the things, share, just not online, but also offline with your friends and family. And if you feel like donating to the Patreon, that is always appreciated. But all those links will be down in the description below. It's always it's always a pleasure to have you guys supporting this podcast, but I hope to see you all next week. And don't forget, if you eat today, thank a farmer.